Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, as you always are, Fridays, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. And I welcome you wherever you're listening, all over the world, tuning in to On the Couch. And we have a great guest as usual today. Wonderful subject. Probably one of the most important subjects that I think that people need to learn about and understand, because it is prevalent throughout the world. A lot of people don't talk about it. A lot of people hide it from their families. But actually, it's becoming more acceptable in the real world out there. And we're talking about depression, basically, and other mood disorders that can go along with that, or are different or separate from that. You know, most of us have felt depressed, or we've had the blues, as we call it, in our lives due to tough times or events which have knocked us down. And I was reading the studies about that, and they're indicating that depression affects roughly 15% of the population at some point in life. And I'm not just talking about feeling, I don't feel well because I had words with my partner or my boss or whatever. This is more clinical depression that we're talking about. And, you know, many of the patients who come in to see me, of course, they find out how to cope and manage their clinical depression, whether it's long-term or trying to adjust to, as we call it, and my guest will call it, an environmental stressor that really has usually affected our ability to feel more positive. So if you're out there and a regular listener, you know, I've talked about some of the various cognitive, behavioral, and as we call, insight-oriented therapeutic tools to help you out. And I've also thanked you many times, as I do now, for emailing me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. If you have any questions, comments about my guest, or would like to just talk about your own issues, or, you know, please feel free to email us, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. We're here. And by the way, I'm not your therapist, guys. I'm not here to give you therapeutic sessions. I'm just here to inform you and give great suggestions and have amazing guests on my show. So, by the way, I'm really impressed by this book that I'm going to be sharing with you, and of course, my guest. The book is entitled Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now. And I'm, like I said, pleased to be able to have the author of this book, Susan Noonan, MD, on the show today to help you learn how to define the levels of your depression, and when you may need to get professional help. And what I really liked about the book is it also provides a down-to-earth approach to help you manage all those mental and physical symptoms of depression, which we're going to be talking about, which are real. You know, a lot of other folks don't understand it unless they've really experienced deep depression. So we're going to try to help you understand that better if you have friends or family members who are coping with that, or, of course, yourself. What I really like about the book is it's really down to earth, and it's written with a lot of compassion, and it provides the tools here. It is like a workbook. So I love those kind of books. You guys know that out there, you regular listeners. So anyway, let me welcome on the air the author of the book, Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now, Dr. Susan Noonan. Hi, Dr. Noonan. How are you?
Hi, and thank you very much for having me today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I really want to thank you for writing this really helpful book. I mean, it really, what I was so happy about is that it covers a lot of aspects of coping with depression and, you know, other mood disorders as well, other mental disorders that go along with depression. So I also
I'm so pleased to hear that. Thank you.
No, it was wonderful. And, you know, I always get feedback from a lot of listeners who call in or email me, and they say that they appreciate the openness from my expert guests and authors about what they've been through. And I always love to ask it. So I'm going to, right off the bat here, ask you to talk a little bit more about what you experienced and how it has helped you with your understanding of others, you know, who have mental issues or mood disorders.
Well, I have depression, which is on the bipolar spectrum, began as a teenager.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't receive professional treatment until I was 45.
My goodness.
That just wasn't done,
right?
At least not in my family.
Sure.
And when I first began treatment, excuse me,
sure,
for the first few years, I was unable to speak of my illness to anybody.
Right, right.
I was made to go to groups, and I would just sit there in silence.
Oh.
But I gradually opened up over time.
Mm-hmm.
And now I work with others, sharing my story to help people gain hope. I write books and blogs,
mm-hmm,
and I'm on your radio show.
Yay.
But living through it allows me to relate better to others who go through the same thing. To be more empathetic and understanding of the personal and family and work and social issues and challenges that we all face.
Sure.
It's not that I've been there. Mm. I am there.
Right. Right. So it's a lifelong thing. It really is.
It is.
You know, working through it. And thank goodness for the amazing medications they have now. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, it's medications, but it's also talk therapy, too.
Yes. Yes, it is. And so you actually began your career. You were very young when you, like you said, started receiving symptoms. Is this what made you decide to be a doctor, a psychiatrist?
No, no, actually, I'm not a psychiatrist.
Ah.
No, I am doing psychiatry now, but I did not start out as a psychiatrist.
Uh-huh.
I was in, you know, general medicine and emergency medicine, and then I changed course midstream after I had a lot of experience, and my family had a lot of experience with the illness in different members.
Sure. And it's so important, as we'll be talking about, you know, that the support from family members and friends to really, you know, try to understand how difficult it can be getting through this clinical depression and bipolar disorder and other, you know, mood disorders, or any disorder for that matter.
Very true.
You know, and yeah, people just, I don't know if they're completely clear on how deeply depression affects those who have it. So can you talk about some of the symptoms of clinical depression and also the bipolar spectrum or bipolar disorder, Dr. Noonan?
Sure. I will briefly mention the symptoms, and then I'll tell you what it's really like.
Okay.
You can find a list of the symptoms of major depression and bipolar disorder online or in the DSM-5, which is the guidelines that doctors go by to diagnose the illnesses. And briefly, there are two related illnesses. Depression is the down moods, and bipolar disorder is involves symptoms of depression, the down moods, alternating with symptoms of elevated high, the mania or hypomania.
Yes.
And in order to make the diagnosis of depression, you need to have 5 of 11 items on a list that includes being sad, depressed, irritable, losing interest or pleasure in things, changes in your sleep or appetite or weight, decreased ability to think and focus, feeling worthless or hopeless or suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're having bipolar disorder and you have the hyperactive portion, the mania, then you might have a decreased need for sleep with racing thoughts and feeling distractible or more talkative and engage in high-risk behaviors. But this is what it's really like.
Wow.
You have deep, deep despair coming from deep inside with physical and emotional pain and suffering. And the hours and days seem endless, very gray and murky, and you only see the negative things, feeling guilty and worthless without hope, and potentially very, very irritable in some people. You lose interest in the things you used to like and don't experience pleasure anymore. Motivation's gone. Sleep may not come, or there might be too much of it, yet it's really hard to get out of bed and move about. Fatigue is overwhelming. Food has no taste. You withdraw from people and activities that you used to like, and you might lose friends. Communication and small talk is just a major effort.
Oh, boy.
Your thinking slows down. It's hard to concentrate and focus, so school and work suffer. Projects and assignments and the mail piles up, and you might spend hours just staring into space. The thoughts you have are often very distorted and negative, yet they seem believable to you, and your thinking is really disorganized. Wow. So at times, you might believe that death is a welcome relief.
Sure. My goodness.
You know, with being bipolar, when you're in the manic phase, it's like having a storm inside your head. Your thoughts and your speech race from topic to topic.
Oh, my goodness.
You might be too disorganized and distracted to function well, but you don't realize it. In fact, you might think you can do anything you choose and that you have great ideas. And you start and stop a lot of different projects without finishing any of them. You don't feel you need sleep. And you feel energized and not tired. And you might have really extreme impulses. As I mentioned earlier, you might have exorbitant shopping, excessive spending, sexual behaviors, driving too fast, a lot of impulses that lead you to make some poor decisions. That's what it's really like.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Dr. Noonan, for sharing that. I mean, that is what I hear every day in my practice. Same thing. And it, you know, we can have a clinical description on the ICD-10, but when you're living it, you nailed it. Those are the realities of trying to cope with it. And it, you know, it's sort of become a thing here in Hollywood where, where we're located, about, this actor has bipolar disorder and that actor. So in a way it has become more acceptable and people understand and say, wow, I was wondering where she got all that energy from to, you know, do a movie so quickly and be so good at what she, you know, in her craft. But, I think in a lot of places, other places, you know, like less metropolitan cities, I think it's a little more difficult, and in many cultures too, to understand and accept, you know, the diagnosis of bipolar and or major depression as well. Don't you think?
I think you're right.
Yeah. Something that I've seen. We are getting some emails here, and promise I'll get to a couple for you as we move on here. And it's at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I appreciate you emailing me, listeners, about their depression and whatever issues that you're dealing with. Today I'm talking to Dr. Susan Noonan. She's a medical doctor. She's written a book called Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now. She's also the author of another terrific book. By the way, I don't know if you got this one, but it's When Someone You Know Has Depression, Words to Say and Things to Do. It's an excellent book, and we'll tell you at the end of the show how you can get a hold and find out more about Dr. Noonan, but really get her books because they really will educate you and help you understand, you know, depressive disorders, mood disorders, things like that. And I was just wondering, does everyone always need to ask or seek professional help for depression or mood disorders? Or, and how can they tell the difference between what they can handle on their own and when professional help is necessary?
Those are great questions, Michelle.
Thanks.
So if you have a very minor or mild episode of depression, you probably don't need professional help. But most people do. And the thing to remember is the longer an episode goes on, or goes untreated, the more difficult it is to treat, and recovery takes longer. For all of us, life is full of ups and downs.
Yes.
And most of the time, we can manage them on our own, sometimes with the help of friends and family. But when the downtimes last for longer than 2 weeks, or they interfere with our life and our ability to function, like at work or school or socially, then it's time to consider getting some professional help.
Yes.
Ideally, a mental health specialist who can offer you skills that help us to cope with an illness, understand ourselves better, learn healthy ways to manage stress and adjust to major life losses and transitions.
Oh, yes. So true. I agree. I think, you know, it's always wonderful to have someone to talk to, a professional, even if you don't have any kind of a clinical diagnosis, just to let things out because, of, you know, as we call them, you know, adjustment disorders or adjusting to environmental stressors. But when you are experiencing more severe levels of depression and or mood disorders of any kind, I agree. It's so important. And usually the main treatment, as you point out in your book, is cognitive behavioral therapy, which has been empirically proven to really help along with the medication therapy, many people who have a severe disorder. Yeah.
And it's good because they're not involved in our lives, emotionally tied up in our lives, the way a friend or a family member would be.
Exactly.
And they have the skills to offer that, of course, a friend would not have.
Yes. I have a question that just came in from someone, and it's perfectly timed. So if you don't mind, I'll ask this. It came in on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And it says, thanks, Dr. Noonan, for being on Dr. Michelle's show. I am 28 years old and was diagnosed with major depressive disorder when I was 18. I've been in CBT therapy, and psychoanalytic therapy as well, for about 10 years off and on that has helped me. But my doctor is stressing the need to add an antipsychotic along with my antidepressant medication. How do you feel about that? Oh boy. There you go, Dr.
That's a great question.
It's all yours.
I generally don't get into the details of prescribing medications on a show like this. However,
I
will say that many times a medication like an antipsychotic medication is used as an adjunctive treatment in addition to a standard antidepressant medication, and it can be quite effective.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you're psychotic or that you need that degree of medication. It's just they've been shown to be effective in depression as an adjunct or an additional treatment to help bolster the effects of the antidepressant treatment. So I like a doctor who kind of thinks out of the box and looks at the whole picture, and I would be open to a recommendation. And if you have a good conversation with your doctor in what we call shared decision-making, you're an active participant in that discussion, I think that's very important. And I would be open to a recommendation and not be afraid of a recommendation, something such as that. It's not an uncommon recommendation for people to be on that combination of medications.
Yes, that's what I understand as well. So thank you, Dr. Noonan, and thank you so much for writing in this question because I think it's really valid. Good question. Most helpful.
It is.
And I think I also prefer, you know, psychiatrists, medical doctors who can think out of the box as well and say, well, let's try this because you seem to still, you know, be suffering and not functioning as well as I'd like you to be. There's something that's really interesting to me in your book, which I really loved because it's the way I work with people as well. So I really sort of resonated with this. You talk about how important it is for us to define our baseline or our healthy inner self. So can you sort of describe what this is and why it's so important to do that?
Okay. Well, a lot of times in depression, a person can feel lost to him or herself.
Right.
And you have difficulty remembering just what you were like before the episode began.
Right.
It seems that depression is all that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And your baseline self of who, what you were like and who you are just seems to fade into the background.
Right.
And the reason this is important is because you want to stay connected to your baseline and underlying self, sense of who you are, so that you can regroup and gather your lifelong coping resources that get you through the difficult times in life,
mm-hmm.
including this episode of depression.
Yes.
If you can readily grasp who you are as a person, you can feel more stable mm-hmm. and grounded. And then you can draw on the skills and the strength that you've had all along to deal with and manage depression.
Mm-hmm.
If you have your baseline inner self to draw on, then that aids in your recovery. So in my book, I offer an exercise to help you with this. It's kind of fun. It's easy to do. It's a way to help you remember your strengths, your good qualities, your accomplishments, which you deny when you're depressed that
right.
you had any of those.
Right.
And then you have them accessible to you during mm-hmm. times of stress to remind you that you really are a strong and competent person.
Mm. That's so true. And beautifully said. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle here, and my special guest is Dr. Susan Noonan. She's an MD, a part-time certified peer specialist at McLean Hospital. She's a consultant to Massachusetts General Hospital and a Clinosis, Inc., right? Did I pronounce that correctly,
right.
Susan?
You there did, you go. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about her latest book, Managing Your Depression, What You Can Do to Feel Better. And, you know, she's also written some amazing books as well, particularly another one earlier that you can check out, When Someone You Know Has Depression, Words to Say and Things to Do. Right now we're talking about her latest book, And some of the symptoms and how to identify whether or not we may have a more serious depression rather than just sort of situational things that we have to deal with. We all have to deal with. We all feel depressed. And so it's sort of defining really clinically, how are we functioning? And there are different check boxes for that. But a lot of times we have negative thoughts, as you described earlier, Dr. Noonan, that can really cloud our judgment, especially when we're in the heat of it, you know, when we're right there and mm-hmm. we're feeling terrible and the mood disorder is really affecting our self-esteem and generally causing distress. So how can we recognize what are called distorted beliefs? And what are some of the tools that we can use to change our thinking patterns, to sort of change the way we feel?
Well, sometimes we have a thought or a belief that causes us distress. And if that happens, it's important to look at those because sometimes those thoughts are not accurate.
Mm.
Maybe they're negative or distorted.
Mm.
If that thought is about, or if it's a thought, or if it's about interpretation of something that happened in your life, and if those are inaccurate or distorted in some way, you'll feel an emotion in response to that mm-hmm. might cause you distress.
Right.
And this often happens in depression.
Mm-hmm.
So you begin by looking at the facts that surround or support that belief or thought.
Yes.
You look at the evidence for or against it. Just take a piece of paper, write two columns, evidence for, evidence against.
Mm.
And then you look at, where did that thought come from? Was it something from very long ago in my life or something more recent?
Mm.
You could then challenge any inaccurate interpretation of those thoughts. And you could use CBT, which is cognitive behavior therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You might do that, though, with your healthcare provider. Not too easy to do on your own, but I have some exercises in my book to help you with that. CBT uses a series of exercises to challenge and replace those negative and distorted thoughts that come along with depression,
mm-hmm.
and they replace them with something that's more believable, something mm-hmm. that's more accurate. And that in turn affects and improves how you feel.
That makes sense.
So you learn mm-hmm. to identify and change thinking patterns that might be distorted, beliefs that are inaccurate, behaviors that are unhelpful, and replace all of that with more realistic ones mm-hmm. which then leads to a change in the way you feel.
Mm-hmm. And in your book, you refer, of course, to the superstars of cognitive behavioral therapy. You have drawn, on those references as well, of course, from Beck and Dr. David Burns, who is really amazing in describing what we call cognitive distortions or distortive thoughts, that distortions or distorted thinking that you describe in your book, such as mm-hmm. filtering, you know, focusing on and magnifying the negative details while ignoring all the positive aspects of a situation.
Right. Yeah. You think of all or nothing, black and white thinking.
Right.
There are different categories of ways that we can distort things.
Mm-hmm. There are many different types. And depending on the studies and, Beck and Dr. Burns studies, things like that, they really do have a lot of, maybe there's 10, maybe there's 12. But I think at some time in our lives, we all do these things. But it's how frequently do you think these distorted thoughts? Is it difficult for you to snap back into reality in terms of, well, wait a minute, sort of challenging those distorted thoughts. So that's
right.
Sort of the key.
And do the distorted thoughts, how much do they bother you?
Yeah.
Are they causing you distress?
Yes. Yes. And it goes so far sometimes as to, as you know, Dr. Noonan, ruminations. I mean, people just can't get negative thoughts out of their minds. They keep going over mm-hmm. and over, and, that goes into another classification of, mental disorders, but I think it's very common when you have depression and you have distorted thinking sometimes.
Very true.
Yeah. I also love the way in your book that you talk about basic health maintenance tools that we should practice to help maintain our depression, mood disorders, and whatever kind of disorder. So can you talk about some of those other basic maintenance tools that we can do?
Great question. The basics of mental health are essentially the basics of health in general. And they include, first, taking your medications as prescribed, if they're prescribed, mm-hmm. avoiding street drugs and alcohol, and having a minimum amount of caffeine, at least stop it by noontime because it sticks around in your system for a long time.
Yeah.
And then have a regular pattern of sound sleep 7 days a week. You can't, skimp on sleep during the week and try and play catch-up on the weekends.
Boy, is that true.
Then you need a balanced, healthy, nutritious diet, daily physical exercise, a routine and structure to your day.
Mm-hmm.
Because empty hours of endless alone time are just not healthy for anybody.
Sure.
And then you need to avoid isolation by having regular social contacts with your friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
Following these things are not easy, but it decreases your vulnerability to fluctuations in your mood disorder, like depression or bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
and boost your resilience so that you recover more quickly from setbacks.
Yes.
In addition to those things, you need to use some coping techniques if you do have stressors in your life, like self-care, self-soothing, distraction with hobbies or humor or things like that. And then mindfulness strategies are also helpful for a lot of people to get us through the tough times.
So true. Yeah, absolutely so true. And let's talk about some of the differences between men and women in handling depression differently or even mood disorders. I have seen differences. I've read the literature, but are there firm differences between how, men and women, let's just say, act or function when they have a major depressive disorder or bipolar disorder?
That's a great question. I think we used to believe that there really was no difference and that women just had it more frequently than men.
Right.
But now researchers are beginning to appreciate that there actually is a difference, and we're just not as savvy about picking it up in men.
Hmm.
It's thought that some women more often experience the more common symptoms, such as sadness, tearfulness, loss of pleasure and interest, trouble with sleep and appetite, and fatigue, and feeling worthless or hopeless. And in contrast, many men who have depression may experience irritability and agitation, angry outbursts, or acts of aggression, like getting in a fight with somebody or punching a wall. They might be workaholics, engage in substance abuse or high-risk-taking behaviors like gambling, drinking, excessive sexual behavior, and have suicidal thoughts and attempts more often.
Ah, I see.
But men may be more reluctant to seek treatment.
Ah.
They're raised in a society where they need to feel macho, and they will not admit to needing help or feeling impaired or weak that, you know, they might feel if they went to help for depression. And women are more inclined to see any health care provider. They're used to seeing their OBGYN or family physician.
Yeah.
But treatment overall is very similar for both men and women. It includes talk therapy, medication as needed, with a focus on the particular symptoms that would plague us in general.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're right, Dr. Noonan. A lot of men really don't, you know, they don't talk as much about how they're feeling or
their, very true.
You know, their disorders or if they're really feeling low. And, you know, not to be sexist or anything, but I mean, I think there really is a different focus on being, you know, more a problem solver. I'm you know, snap out of it. I think a lot of men are raised, you know, in society by, come on, don't
it's
be a crybaby.
Societal thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't feel that way. You're fine. Snap out of it. You go to school and you can get through this or get, you know, finish your degree and get a great job and, you know, okay, I'll just be quiet and keep it all kind of hidden, you know, down inside.
Yeah.
And then there you go. You're having issues, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just brews. It just brews along.
Then
it explodes sometimes like a volcano.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I have another Gmail here that came through that I think is really interesting and probably appropriate for what we're talking about here. She said, my fiance seems to manage his bipolar disorder pretty well. But from time to time when he's manic, he gets angry a lot and has outbursts. And will eventually apologize. What is the difference between having bipolar angry outbursts and that other disorder? I don't think she knows what it is, which has to do with impulsive anger disorder or outbursts. That's a good question.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
You'd have to put it in context, and you'd have to know his whole history and the whole picture to accurately answer that.
Right.
And, you know, on the surface, they might look very similar. You really would have to put it in context to know that his history is bipolar disorder.
Exactly.
And so it would be less likely that he would have two things going on at the same time. That it probably is related to his bipolar disorder. But, you know, I don't know that I can say more than that.
Sure.
Without more information.
Exactly. Exactly. But thank you so much for sharing this information with us. I just wanted to let you know that I think maybe what you might be referring to is it's called intermittent explosive disorder. And I know you didn't put your name here on the email, and I appreciate that. That's fine. It's sometimes abbreviated as IED, and it's a behavioral disorder, and it's characterized by explosive outbursts of anger, violence, and often to the point of rage that are disappropriate to the situation at hand. So there's a lot of impulse and, you know, lack of impulse control, a lot of screaming, which are supposedly triggered by a relatively inconsequential event. So I think maybe that's what you're referring to, but Dr. Noonan is right. I think you need to look at your fiance's history and find out what that's about to see if, you know, there is, like you said, there is a diagnosis here of bipolar disorder. So absolutely that is part of the symptomology with that disorder. So you might just talk to him about that. And if your fiance, she or he, is having you know, sessions regularly with a psychologist or psychiatrist, have them ask their doctor. I think that would be the best way, don't you, Dr. Noonan?
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we briefly touched on this at the beginning, and one of the common things that I hear from patients who you know have to deal with depression and are coping with it, and other mental health issues, they don't feel support. They don't feel like their family or friends really understand what they're going through. And sometimes they'll say things like, oh, you're just going through a rough time. Or one of my favorites, just get over it. This too shall pass. Right? And we also talked about the cultural shames and systems that associate, mental illness, not a good thing to have or not to talk about. So what should people do with others in their lives that aren't really supportive or understanding about their mental health problems?
Well, that's a great question. That's very familiar to me. Loved ones tend to have different viewpoints, just like lots of people in the world.
Yeah.
They have different knowledge and understanding about mood disorders, and they might not be as supportive or as understanding as you'd like. Mm. So a key thing is to educate them about your illness. You could provide written materials that you can get online from reliable sources, or you could have them join the family meetings at DBSA, which is the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, or NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Mm. And those are often quite helpful. Mm-hmm. Another idea is to have them attend a family meeting along with you and your therapist together. Mm-hmm. And that could improve their understanding of your illness and the challenges that you face. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, you just might need to step back and try to understand that you might never be able to change the other person's opinion. And then limit your conversations with them to other topics, not your illness. Mm. And if then your interactions with them are still upsetting, you just might have to limit the amount of contact you have with them, either by telephone, text, email, whatever. Because unfortunately, sometimes relationships are lost when one has a mental illness like depression or bipolar disorder.
Sure.
And that's a great sadness.
Yes, it is. And bless your heart for being so candid about that. I really appreciate, that you dealt with that same thing. I mean, it's firsthand, Dr. Noonan. And thanks for appreciate your transparency on that. I love where you write in your book, which is entitled, by the way, Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now, folks. That individuals who have major depressive or any kind of depressive or mood disorder, they have every right to keep their illness confidential and disclose it only to those closest to you. And you say that it's advisable in many situations, like people you've just met or recent acquaintances you don't know very well. What I hear a lot from people who are, they've been sort of forced out into the dating world, either, they're widows, widowers, or they're not with someone, they had a recent breakup, or they're looking for a life partner. Okay. So one of the questions I get frequently from people who do online dating and meet with people and try to get to know them is, when should I tell them that I have a depressive disorder or a mood disorder? How should I talk about my illness? Is it going to scare people away? I don't want someone to run away if I share this with them on the first several dates. So what would you suggest, Dr. Noonan?
That's a great question. I would not do it on the first several dates.
Yeah.
No. You don't know the other person. You don't know what their reaction is going to be. Of course, if they're not going to react well, it's not somebody you want to spend a lot of time with.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, you want to get to know the person before you exchange a confidence such as that. You want to be able to trust the other person with that information.
Yes.
When you do get to know them well enough where you are sharing a confidence like that, you might say something like, you have a biologically based illness, and it needs treatment for you. But don't speak in technical terms.
Right.
Keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Don't give too much really personal detail at first, mm-hmm. and just speak in very plain terms. You know, you just tell them that you need to receive treatment, and you are receiving excellent treatment for you to function well, and that you're feeling, well, obviously, if you're out on a date, then you're feeling fine. Mm-hmm. So emphasize that point, and then don't belabor it. Move on to whatever the next subject might be.
Right.
Then as you get to know the person in much more detail, you can discuss more detailed questions he or she might have.
Right. Exactly. Don't switch the topic too quickly. How about those Boston Red Sox?
Oh, talk about a love affair. I'm from New England, so
there,
of course.
So
I don't know if my name will be mud now in LA.
There's a lot of people rooting for you guys. So I mean, here, you know, don't go Dodgers, but I mean, no, don't have any flack. But what my point is, don't change the subject too quickly. But if someone starts to talk and ask big questions about your, you know, depressive disorder on your first or second date, don't avoid it too much. You know, on that note, you know, talking about online dating, in your book, you talk about how our exposure, especially teenagers and young adults' exposure to social media 24/7. Is a huge contributing factor in depression. Can you talk a little bit more about how that's affecting people this age?
Oh, it's really difficult for teenagers. They're under extraordinary pressure from themselves, from peers, at school, while dealing with changing bodies in a society where emphasizes body image, and that can contribute to depression. When they're exposed to social media 24/7, it makes it hard to escape the need to be or appear to be perfect. Mm-hmm. There's no firm line between their real and online worlds, and they can take on angst from others they've never even met. Social media can lead to technical and online bullying, for example, in Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat entries, and that can be malicious.
Oh boy.
It can make them feel like an outcast or a target, which can lead to depression and anxiety. So it can lead to depression, it can lead to eating disorders, it can lead to all types of things, and people can be very, very sensitive to that.
Sure can. And, you know, like you said, Dr. Noonan, with changing bodies and the hormones and what, you know, teenagers, we've all been through it, and, you know, how we all, you know, have fears and want to fit in with everybody and how difficult, you know, it can be.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when you're dealing, you know, with maybe you already have an existing, you know, depressive disorder, mood disorder of some kind, and, you know, like you said, you're exposed to the social media 24/7, and you can, you know, read everyone else's Instagram or Facebook and find out what you're not doing, or comparing yourself and feeling less than because, you know, you're not looking like you're having a wonderful time on your posts. Everyone else is, you know. And, what I tell people who say that to me, I said, well, it's just social media. It's not really real. Yes, we're all, you know, out there doing things, but most of the posts are trying to prove that the people are happier or popular or great looking. You know, there's professional makeup artists that work with people so they'll look great on their posts. So
it's true.
You know, it's all,
and you never see what used to be called the B side.
Right.
You know, when there used to be vinyl records and there was an A side and a B side with the record, the song that didn't quite make the big hit.
Yes.
And so you never see that, the side of life, that when they are with no makeup on and their hair isn't done and their face is like, you know, a little crooked. You never see that part of their life.
Exactly. It's so true. I really appreciate that. No. So, you know, just to help folks out, you do have a section in your book, Take Control of Your Depression Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now, that does refer to a lot of pressure, you know, from social media and how it can affect all of us, actually. But I think particularly the teenage and the or the adolescent and the young adult population. I hear it every day, Dr. Noonan. I'm not feeling enough of enough.
It's pretty common.
Yeah, it is. They compare themselves with everybody else. And if you can just look at it as we are all our own personal public relations departments. And that's what we're trying to do, is make ourselves look better. And that's it. That's basically what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really also appreciate in your book the way that you have worksheets for things to think about, people to you know, just sort of write down things, or using their own, you know, they can use the memo on their phone or whatever notes to themselves, or, for coping strategies and things to think about, cognitive behavioral tools. I really appreciate how you use those as well in your book. There's another practice that seems to be really, you know, becoming a lot more popular, and you talk about this in your book, and it might be able to help people as well. It's called mindfulness. So how would you describe that, and how can it help people?
Mindfulness is a way of being in the present moment, just paying attention to what's in front of you, on purpose kind of thing. Mm. If you're washing the dishes, you pay attention to the way the water feels and the soap, you know, circling around the plate, and you're not thinking about or ruminating about what happened yesterday or worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow. Mm. When you're brushing your teeth, you're just brushing your teeth, and you're not worried about everything else in your life. Or if you're out playing with your kids, you're appreciating that moment. And it brings you back to the sense of today, this moment, not today. And it's really been shown to help decrease the chance of relapse. And recurrence in some patients who have, or some people, I should say,
yes,
who do have depression.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's pretty easy to do. It just takes a little practice.
Sure.
But paying attention on purpose without judging yourself.
Mm-hmm. So true. And the more, as we learn anything, the more through repetition and rehearsal, and the more supposedly mindful we become, it really does help us with our focus. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
It does. Yes.
Yeah. And it can really improve the quality of your life, you know, living in the
present. I think it can. I do.
Somewhat like, you know, a meditative state in a way, because you're in the here and now, and you're not worrying about the, you know, what ifs, or the what happened back then, and I shoulda, coulda, and that kind of thing.
Right. Right. No should statements, no shoulda statements. Exactly.
There you go. So, you know, this book is lovely because, again, it describes so many ways of helping people. You provide a lot of information about, you know, how to help people who are experiencing depression or other mood disorders, bipolar disorder, others. And how to sort of take stock of their mental state, chart a course towards emotional balance, track their progress. And you also share some of your personal experience, which I really appreciate. So it's a terrific book if you want to learn more about depression, mood disorders, whether you have it, folks, or your family members or friends or whoever in your life. It's just a wonderful way of learning. And there's so many wonderful references as well that are empirical. So thank you so much, Dr. Noonan, for writing this book for everyone, because I think it's going to be terrific for educating people and helping them in general.
Well, thank you for helping get the word out, and I appreciate your time today.
Oh, absolutely. What's the best way people can get a hold of your book? And by the way, your other book, it's called When Someone You Know Has Depression, Words to Say and Things to Do.
Yes. Both my books are available on Amazon.com,
great,
Barnes & Noble online, as well as in bookstores, in many bookstores around the world. Also, through the Johns Hopkins University Press website. I have my own website, which is SusanNoonanMD.com, and there are links to those sites, as well as my blogs, which I try to post pretty regularly with some pretty good tips and new information that I think people will find helpful. So I encourage people to try that. There's also a way on my website for people to write to me with either suggestions or questions they might have.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Susan Noonan, for being on the show today. Wonderful. I know you helped a lot of people, and they really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Michelle, for having me.
All right. Take good care, and look forward to talking with you sometime soon.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, guys, the book, again, Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now. Lots of great strategies in there. They really will help you feel better now, based on a lot of empirical evidence, and it's written really well. It's an easy read and comfortable. You guys can flow with it and understand others and yourself. All right, this is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and it's been fun here being on the couch with you all. Next week, we're going to talk about creating your own life and empowering yourself. How to do that. All right, thanks for listening, guys. As I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.